More laid-off workers had to sign up for unemployment benefits in America in the last month and a half than there are people in all of Texas. I'm David Brancaccio. Adding what we learned today were the 3.8 million people who signed up for state unemployment benefits in the last week. It is now 30 million people laid off in just 6 weeks. Let's get some important nuance by turning to Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Hi there.
Good morning.
I mean, it's everywhere, but it's the service sector, especially.
This is the first time we've seen a service sector-led recession. Really stunning to see the pullback in people spending on services.
This also is oddly, perversely, ironically, healthcare jobs, people having to sign up for unemployment after losing those.
Exactly. In the month of March, before the major shelter in places, and in the midst of a health pandemic, we actually saw healthcare jobs have the largest drop in history in the month of March. More than 40,000 jobs in healthcare were lost that month. And that was early in the month when we took the survey, the losses accumulated over the month. And that includes everything from going to your dentist to elective surgeries to going to a doctor's office because people got afraid of actually going to those places. And the pullback really hurt the side of healthcare that makes money and left only that dealt with COVID.
There's also news today that consumer spending fell 7.5% in March, the biggest drop since they started doing this statistic in the late Eisenhower administration.
We saw the saving rate actually jump to 13.1%. We pulled back on spending even more than we lost in incomes during the month, and that pop in the saving rate is the highest saving rate we've seen since May 1975, coming out of that recession.
Mm. Diane Swonk, she's the chief economist at Grant Thornton. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One of the many themes of our continuing coverage of the COVID economy, the pandemic widens inequality. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more on health risks and economic risks for communities of color.
New research from McKinsey & Company explored the impact of COVID-19 on Black Americans, looking at the industries and geographic areas where Black people are working. Shelley Stewart is a partner with McKinsey.
39% of Black jobs are at risk versus 34% for the broader population. And yeah, some folks may say it's only 5 percentage points, but it's a pretty big difference.
That could be close to a million additional Black jobs at risk. And that's echoed by research conducted by LeanIn.org, which found that risk of job loss is already a reality for many Black women in particular. LeanIn CEO Rachel Thomas.
We know Black women are twice as likely as white men to say they've been either laid off, furloughed, or had their hours or pay reduced because of the pandemic.
One example of many, 48-year-old Zabora Rohan in Raleigh, North Carolina. She was working at an early childhood education center with about 10 toddlers before she was laid off due to COVID-19.
I do miss them. I don't even know if they'll, even remember me.
She also doesn't know when she'll go back to work, but she's getting some unemployment insurance and financial help from her union. She was unsurprised Black women are feeling the economic impact more than others.
We're the ones that's in these industries that don't have health insurance, that don't have paid sick time off. We don't make a lot of money. So we're suffering a lot right now.
Thomas at LeanIn says the current economic shock is exacerbated by the inequality present before the pandemic.
Women on average are paid 18% less than men here in the U.S. It's worse for Black women. They make 38% less than white men. It's worse for Latinas. They make 45% less than white men.
Thomas says those lower wages translate to less savings, which means less of a safety net when women are faced with an unexpected job loss of an unknown duration. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
In early trading, the Dow is down 283 points, 1.2%, the S&P down 0.9%, the NASDAQ down just slightly. Some of you are still reading. Some of us have gotten through all 12 chapters of the free economics textbook. Tell me your story of a highlight or a low light of your reading. You can email me at morningreport@marketplace.org, and you can sign up for Econ Extra Credit at our website. We'll be right back. We've been following the loans to businesses to help them keep people on the payrolls into the early summer, what's called the Paycheck Protection Program. Some big businesses and large banks had been partaking, shutting out smaller businesses. Well, for some hours yesterday, the federal government locked the big banks out of the system. Marketplace's Nova Safo joins us. What was the rationale for closing the electronic door on the bigger lenders?
Yeah, that's right. So the big banks have gotten a lot of flack for allegedly favoring their bigger clients in applying for the PPP loans. And the way it works is if you're a small business, you have to go through your bank to get the loan. You fill out the application and the bank processes it through an online portal with the Small Business Administration. Well, the SBA basically set aside 8 hours, 4 p.m. Eastern until midnight last night, just for the smaller banks, presumably with smaller business clients. So they'd get a chance to get through the system and get loans approved. Now, we spoke with Mirsa Baradaran, a banking law expert at the University of California. She said the move is basically a slap on the wrist for big banks, but could have unintended consequences for businesses.
Maybe a little bit on the margins might help a few more small businesses get money before the big businesses come in. But a lot of small businesses have accounts at Wells Fargo and Citi. And so you may end up hurting some small businesses.
No, I expect the bigger banks shut out briefly will not be loving this.
They're not loving it. They're not happy. And the head of one banking association said the SBA would be better off fixing its approval system. Banks have been complaining about that online portal that they have to use to process loans. They say it's glitchy and causing delays. And we know from one banking group that almost 1 million loans have been processed so far in this second round of funding alone. So there is some progress.
Nova, thank you. Tesla took analysts by surprise and reported a profit for the first 3 months of the year. Elon Musk's electric car company made $16 million. That's despite what the pandemic is doing to car factories and the ability of people to shop and to pay for new cars. Marketplace's Jack Stewart has more.
The start of 2020 was Tesla's third profitable quarter in a row. Garrett Nelson, analyst at CFRA, says that maybe because the timing of this pandemic could have been a lot worse for Tesla. The company had just finished spending a lot of money on the launch of the Model Y, small SUV, and the build-out of a factory in China.
The fact that they're not burning a lot of cash or spending a lot on projects really helps them in this environment.
A factory in Germany and a new plant in the US are still in the early stages, and Nelson says Tesla could defer those expenses if necessary. But in typical Elon Musk style, the CEO told investors on a call yesterday that the company would push ahead.
We'll absolutely pedal to the metal on new products and expanding the company.
Tesla says it's still too soon to say how the next quarter, and indeed the rest of 2020, will go. Much depends on how soon it can resume production of the Model Y, seen as crucial to the future of the company. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
During that quarterly investor briefing, Musk chose to go off on the coronavirus stay-at-home orders, calling them, quote, fascist, and it's likely to forcibly imprison people, he likened it to. Musk has been downplaying the virus in tweets for most of the year. Considering the U.S. alone, the number of people who've died from COVID-19 surpassed the number of people who died in the Vietnam War now. In New York, New Jersey, actually, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. We are from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.